We're back. We're back once again.
We are back once again.
Yeah. Listeners to the podcast might have format whiplash as we've had Phoebe's return, only to then be superseded by a Pete return to the podcast. Who will prevail?
I've returned again.
Yeah. For various scheduling reasons, Phoebe's having a phased return.
Yeah.
So there's intermittent Pete. We've had a Phoebe episode. We're having a Pete episode now. We're going to have a Phoebe and Pete episode. I think it's going to be the next one or the one after next. So
yeah.
Prepare for your ears to be confused by the range of voices that you'll be hearing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What did you talk about? Should I ask? You're allowed to ask about other co-hosts.
Well, it's kind of like polyamory. Like, there's all these like complicated rules.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, like you can do it, but I don't want to know about it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we did a general update. Although, as is often the way with Phoebe, we got onto some real tangents.
Yeah,
I can't even remember now, but we got in deep about some stuff.
Yeah,
we went on a long tangent about the fact that she doesn't really know how to ride a bike.
Great,
because at first she claimed she does know how to ride a bike, and then she said, "Well, I don't know how to ride a bike reliably." And I was like, I feel like the whole idiom with riding a bike is that you either know how to do it or you don't. There's not really like gradations of,
you know,
famously, it's like riding a bike.
Yeah.
And so I think, yeah, we came down on the side of, she basically doesn't know how to ride a bike. And then this produced many tangents such as, street performers and what they're up to.
Yeah. With their unicycles.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. 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 There was a long discussion of unicycling and the pointlessness thereof.
I feel that way about swimming, in that I can, to a degree, swim,
okay,
sort of, but to I cannot degree. Swim reliably.
Oh, that is interesting. It feels very unusual for an Australian. As yeah, well. I feel like it's a swimming heavy culture.
Yeah, very much so. But I am in the vast minority of people who cannot. I cannot swim reliably.
Yeah, yeah. You can swim in a sort of in a life or death situation, but you're
well,
not.
Well, we'll find out.
Next week on the pod, we throw Pete 1 mile off the shore of the UK.
Yeah. If I was in the inner circle of Mr. Beast, this would be one of the episodes. Would be, can I swim my way to safety? Can I swim well enough to save myself from drowning?
Yeah, yeah. And if you do, like 1,000 orphans in Africa are cured of syphilis or something.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you don't, he kills them all.
And the thumbnail is me, half submerged, arms in the air, trying not to drown, but like kind of like a smiley face sort of one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's got you in a perfectly flesh coloured swimming cap.
Yes.
Yeah, brutal scenes.
Mm.
I'm not a great swimmer, I have to say. I'm competent, like I can swim, I wouldn't drown. If I fell in a river, I'd be okay. But,
that's good.
I'm not a competitive swimmer.
If
someone challenged me to a swimming race, I'm sure I'd lose. Anyone with the confidence to challenge someone else to a swimming race would surely beat me on confidence alone.
Would you enter?
A swimming race?
Yes. If someone challenged you?
I don't know. I think I would attempt to demur. Unless really there was like some necessity to do so.
Yeah.
I always feel, this is actually a type of person that fascinates me, is people who are willing to go toe-to-toe in something where they're not like sure that they'll win.
Yes.
It strikes me as like, it's so embarrassing to claim that you're going to like definitely beat someone at something, like put forward a challenge for no reason. And yet people do it all the time. I've always been of the school that it's much better to, reluctantly accept a challenge and then win.
Yes.
Than to be the guy going, I'll beat anyone at swimming.
I did, during the Edinburgh Fringe, I did a show which was Board Game Smackdown, where there were four comedians who were competing in board games against each other.
Yeah, yeah.
And the host
asked... At the end, you're both on the ladder trying to get the dice off the sort of string on the ceiling. Yeah.
Yeah. And then... the host asks, like, who here is playing to win? And the other three comedians all raise their hands saying they're playing to win. I'm like, I'm just here to have fun.
Yeah.
But that is my strategy because I was playing to win.
Yeah, you want them off
you
balance.
You don't tell them that you're playing to win. What are you guys, idiots?
They're like, we don't need to worry about him.
Yeah, I'm like, then if I lose, well, I didn't lose anything. You all lost something.
Yeah, that's very true.
Did I win? No, but I wasn't playing to win.
No, you weren't playing
check
to win.
Check the record.
Yeah, they were not off playing guard. To win. Yeah, could the court stenographer read that back for us, actually? Yeah.
He was playing for fun. There we go.
Peter Jones was playing for fun. And you know what? He won because he did have fun.
I did have fun. Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
That was the one thing we were all after.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, certain board games are. I have a hatred of games that are like heavily chance-based.
Yes.
So same reason, I've always found like cards incredibly dull as a game, because most card games are just purely like, did you get the good cards? Congratulations, you win.
Yes.
And people play them as though it's like a real game. And I'm like, no, you're just, you might as well just say like, who had the best card? Like just everyone put your cards down and then we'll say, yeah, you won. There's no point going through the charade of playing the game.
Yeah.
I don't know. But then, and some board games are like heavily strategic.
Yes.
And then others, I'm like, I have my suspicions.
Yeah, a lot of luck. How do you feel about Monopoly?
Monopoly is an interesting one because there are strategies where you can win. Mm. But they're also like, the way that you win in Monopoly is like incredibly boring.
Yes.
Monopoly is kind of like Rubik's Cube. Like there's an easy way to win, but it takes all the fun out of it.
Yes.
Once you realize that you're just doing some steps.
Yeah.
I don't know. Have you had a lot of Monopoly-based arguments?
Not really. Did have one. It's a game I've never really properly understood. Like the strategy to it isn't almost. You're like, oh, okay, you're just rolling the dice. Unless you are playing with people who are like, oh no, we can make deals.
Yeah,
you're making deals
yeah.
across the table. I'll sell you this while you're playing. You're like, okay, great, this is good.
The art of the deal.
The art of the deal.
A beautiful deal.
Beautiful hotel.
I've been a hotel. It's all gold. It's on Oak End Road. People say no one wants to stay there. I say, okay, wow. That would be fun to play a game of Monopoly where you're just building the most preposterous property empires of all time.
There is a game. It's it was in that era, like your Game of Life sort of era. There was one called Hotels, which was you were building massive hotels. It was similar. I guess it was similar to Monopoly, but it was like exclusively you're building big hotels, and there's always this big.
Okay.
Hotel figures you could put on the board. You're like, yes, I've got a skyscraper. Yes, I've got like the nice. Taj.
Physically constructing a huge.
Yeah,
that is nice. The board game that I hear has always caused a lot of arguments is Risk, but I've never played Risk.
Risk is also never ending.
Oh, really? Okay.
It's the same as Monopoly. It's like, oh, you could be playing Risk for the rest of your life. Trying to defend New Zealand.
And to what end?
And to what end?
To
give
what
it up.
End? Yeah, it's fine.
Just continue to live there, but you've just got different rulers.
Yeah, that'd be fine.
It's just not you in charge anymore.
Yeah, Chinese New Zealand. That'd be fun.
Exactly.
Yeah. But the South Island wouldn't even notice.
No.
They'd be fine.
They'd be fine.
They're just there looking up at the stars, whatever it is.
Yeah. You think anything in Dunedin changes? Not at all.
No,
of course not.
Not at all. there's just now Chinese on the sign under the English.
Yeah.
It's like Dunedin. It's like Dan Muggleton had that bit about how if the Chinese took over, they would tell us in English because otherwise we wouldn't know what they were talking about.
Yeah. Damien Power has a great bit about that as well, where it's like if the Chinese took over Australia and they didn't mess with the cricket, the footy, and whatever the third one was, you wouldn't even notice.
Yeah, rugby league. I don't know.
If you don't mess with them, we'll be fine.
Yeah, that'll be absolutely fine. No one would complain.
No.
Yeah, easy. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I've never, we weren't a big board game house. We loved the word games, like a bit of like Articulate or Taboo, stuff like that.
Oh, yes.
And a trivia game was always great.
Yeah.
But then I think people don't like playing trivia games with me because it's not fun.
Yeah.
I think that's the, like I had, I remember one Christmas everyone else wanted to play this trivia game. And then all of the children under 10 wanted to be on my team so that they would like arbitrarily win. But it made me feel like Fagin because I was just like, we've just easily creamed this like family trivia game. But it's just me and all the 9-year-olds. they didn't get a single question. They love to be on the winning team.
Why is it no fun? Because you just know?
I think so. Yeah. Because also I've just spent, I was like the precocious child who knew the trivia answers. But then now I've then spent most of my adult life acquiring like abstruse knowledge.
Yeah.
And so I kind of like, I have that kind of like that pub quiz brain, which for the general family trivia night it sort of ruins it for everyone else.
Yes.
And I acknowledge that. So I never suggest a trivia game because I'm just like, well, it's, you know.
But if it comes up, you're like, well, I will win it.
Yeah. Do you have a specialty?
In trivia?
Well, in any board game, is there, do you have a...
I love one. My brother's pretty competitive, but also hates losing. And so growing up, I was very much like, I don't care enough to win.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
I will play.
The age-old Peter Jones strategy. Yeah, I'm playing for
I've
fun.
Been playing it for years. Well-versed in how to get to a point where I'm like, I could win, but you'll be more upset if I do, so you can win.
Very diplomatic.
But now I'm at a point where we will still play board games when we get together as a family, and now I'm like, well, I'm going to beat you now.
Yeah. Oh, okay. The gloves are off.
Now I'm playing to win. You're now an adult man. And I am here to destroy you at this game. Exact my revenge.
That's what it's about. We no longer have to share anything, so I'm here to assert my dominance.
Yeah. No longer in the same room. So.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The gloves are off. Yeah. It's fine. I can get in my car and leave after this. I don't care how sour the atmosphere is.
Yeah, truly.
Yeah. But yeah, we're not here to talk about that.
No, of course not.
We're here to talk about the hit Australian series, Cass and Kim.
Yes.
Which I'd never seen.
Never seen.
Yeah.
I feel like, I don't know how much of it I've seen. I've definitely absorbed so much of it just from existing in Australia. I don't know how many times I would sit down to watch a season. This could have been the first time I ever saw the first episode of this show.
Oh, okay, yeah. But also, there's quite a lot of it, 4 seasons.
Yeah, there's a bit of it. And I think it's probably the most popular Australian comedy series of all time.
It's got to be, surely.
It's got to be. Yeah. I think possibly by a mile.
Yeah, you would think so. And yet remarkable that it's not very popular over here because Neighbours, which is not a good show, massive over here. Like huge, bigger than it is in Australia. And Kath and Kim, kind of a gem, but largely slept on by the UK market.
And in a weird position in the States where it was remade.
Remade in the States?
It was remade in the States.
Oh, no.
Molly Ringwald was in it. Molly Ringwald and, what's her name? She's in... Cruel Intentions.
Sarah Michelle Gellar.
No, one of the minor characters, the third lead female in Cruel Intentions plays her. The cast is pretty good. It got one season, the US Kath and Kim.
Okay, who we got? Well, we got Reese Witherspoon, Selma Blair.
Selma Blair.
Selma Blair, there you go.
I'm pretty sure it's Selma Blair plays Kim. And Molly Ringwald and... It got a season, and it was actually fine. If you read a write-up for it now, they'd say it was probably bad, and one of these terrible remakes. But I'm like, I watched it. I'm like, it was fine. It's not as funny as this, but
yeah.
It was like weird that they remade it.
It strikes me as it would be hard to capture the character of it in an American remake, just because the archetypes just wouldn't. It wouldn't map onto. I felt the same thing about The Office. Like they had to completely change The Office to make it work in an American setting because that degree of just like weird grinding awkwardness just is so alien to Americans.
Yeah, truly.
Mm. But yeah, this is great. One thing when I was watching it with my girlfriend who had seen it before but not in a long time is they're kind of putting the accent on, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Completely. None of those people talk like that at all.
Yeah. It's Australians doing an Australian accent.
Yes.
It's sort of a meta level absorption. Does anyone ever call anyone a big hunk of spunk?
I would say no, but more after this show. Or it's like, no.
Yeah.
Surely not. Do you know anything about anybody involved in it? Jane Turner?
No. Educate me.
Jane Turner and, why have I forgotten?
Gina somebody, right? Is that right?
Why have I blanked on their names? They were with Magnus Szubanski.
Gina Riley.
Gina Riley and Jane Turner. And Magda Szubanski, they had a sketch series. Big Girl's Blouse was a sketch series they were in. They were also in sketch shows throughout, like, the end of the 80s, 90s, bunch of sketch shows. These characters might have been in a sketch show first.
Yeah, that would make sense.
And then they turned it into
kind of like an Australian French and Saunders.
Yes.
Right, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And so then Kel is Glenn Robbins, who is an iconic Australian comedian.
So he's like a comedian aside from being in comedic things.
Was he just in comedic things? He was on a show called The Panel where he was the funniest guy on a funny panel show.
Yeah.
He's a beloved Glenn Robbins.
I'm alarmed to see some pictures of him where he has the haircut from the show in apparently his real life, which is troubling. Because if you haven't, so Glenn Robbins plays Kath's boyfriend, Kel, who... who has one of the most alarming haircuts, I think, possibly in history. It's like a comb over, but for a man who hasn't lost any hair.
Yeah.
It's really peculiar.
Yeah, Kel's an interesting character because he is they're all such specific types of, I mean, he's got his man bag with him. My dad carried a man bag.
Oh, really?
He had a man bag. I'm like, I recognize that sort of thing.
Oh, that's fascinating. Yeah, I've never, it was not really a thing over here.
Yeah.
Although it's now become a thing with the...
Yeah, yeah.
But it's also like the men who have man bags now are the men who are most like champing at the bit of masculinity.
Yes.
It's like to have a man bag in the UK, you have to be like so heterosexual almost to the detriment of anything else in your life.
Yeah.
You've got to be dressed actively badly. There could be not a hint of style in what you're wearing. You've got to have a Ralph Lauren polo shirt that's more horse than shirt. Brill creamed hair. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's Glenn Robinson. Pete Rosethorn, who is the other one. Also another, you know, Australian icon. They're all comedic icons, all five of them.
Yeah. Father of an Australian comedy dynasty.
Yes, that is true.
Yeah.
Lives in Perth in WA. Would you have met Pete Rosethorn at all?
No, I have met his daughter.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. In Perth.
In Perth. Yeah. Well, that makes sense.
There you go. That's a likely place for it to be.
Yeah.
As DeMar would say. So, yeah, and they're kind of mostly known as actors, I'm guessing.
Yeah, they were, sketch performers and then, yeah, comedic actors. And, And I'm not they would have been iconic, all of them, without Kath and Kim anyway. But with Kath and Kim, it's just like upper echelon.
Yeah, it does seem to have had a huge sort of cultural impact.
Yeah.
And I can see why. It's very funny.
Yeah.
I think it's quite hard to watch a sitcom from like I thought it was from the 90s, but it's actually from the early 2000s.
Yeah.
And for it not to feel like really dated.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously it's aesthetically dated,
yes.
But the humor doesn't feel dated.
No. Yeah.
Because it's very kind of, I don't know, it really resonates with the British thing, like the Hun posting.
Yeah.
Or whatever, like the there's like that kind of, it's a real like genre of humor here where there's like a certain type of like middle-aged women that they refer to as Huns. And like they post a lot on Facebook and like,
yeah
like Gemma Collins is absolutely a Hun. And it feels, it feels very like kind of an echo of that, the Australian equivalent.
Yes.
Yeah, it's also quite funny that they're playing like a mother and daughter, but these two women are exactly the same age.
Yeah, which to me, that also feels, there's a bit of that here, where it's like, but that feels one of the strange things about Australian sitcoms is that often, like Chris Lilley does this too, where it's like, the leads are rarely playing like, you know, like, you know, David Brent is Ricky Gervais is, I mean, I guess Steve Coogan is Alan Partridge early, is a young man playing an old man.
Yeah, he's slowly caught up to Alan Partridge's age. Yeah.
Whereas these guys, I always feel like it's some level of all our sitcoms have some level of weird. It's not drag, but everybody's dressing up as like that. Gina Reilly is playing like a woman in her 20s, possibly.
whatever age
she's supposed to be.
She's always wearing a crop top.
Yeah.
At all time.
And then the same as Jane Turner.
Yeah, well, Jane Turner is just dressed like it's the 80s, which is how they signal that she is older.
Yeah.
The perm. The perm. I mean, amazing costumes in this show. Just
incredible.
So many shell suits. And,
Yeah.
So, yeah, the basic premise of the show is that Kath, the mother, is, you know, she's living on her own. She's trying to live her life. She's, you know, she's seeing Kel, this new man. She's hoping that he's going to propose. And meanwhile, then her daughter, Kim, moves back in because she's left her husband, Brett.
Yep.
And then she says, oh, again. So she keeps leaving this man.
They've only been married for 2 months.
Yeah.
She keeps leaving him.
And then keeps going back to him as well.
Of course.
But only briefly. Kath is, you know, she's not happy about this because she's replaced everything in her room with exercise equipment. There's a lot of tension about that. She doesn't want her getting under her feet or getting under her hair, as she keeps saying, which is not an expression I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Her getting in someone's hair, getting under someone's hair is, a new one. And then we've got, the netball lady who comes around constantly. Is her name Susan?
Sharon.
Sharon, that's right.
Yeah.
There's a lot of big laughs in the Sharon.
Yeah.
She feels like one of those characters that's just like she's kind of the Michael the Geordie of Kath and Kim, in that they're just, what, anything weird, they'll just put it on a show. Like in the first episode, she's just wearing an eye patch.
Yes.
And mistakes a dog for a lady because of the eye patch.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's good plot stuff.
Yeah. And Magna Sabansky, who plays Sharon, possibly one of the most beloved Australian actors, full stop, forever.
Okay, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I recently learned there was a Kath and Kim Uber Eats ad.
Yeah.
In recent years with Kim Kardashian.
With Kim Kardashian, yeah.
And Magna Sabansky.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, iconic is what we're saying.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There you go. Explaining the premise of that to Kim Kardashian must have been a great afternoon.
Yeah. And how much does she want? How much from the, it's just like, I'll just stand here and say whatever you told me to say, and then you pay me.
Yeah.
He's like, well, no, I would just, let's watch a couple of episodes so you really get the idea.
We need you in character.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So far, well, I mean, the premise of it is so un-American.
Yeah.
This sort of the small town. I think this is why Australian and British comedies always kind of resonate with each other, because there's this similar kind of like small town, small beer mindset to it. Like the kind of like the episode about the netball match.
Yeah.
Where she's like desperately trying to get ringers for her netball team, and she gets Kim to play, but Kim's terrible at netball. And then Kath steps in, and it turns out that Kath is very good at netball.
Yeah.
But like they're constant, and then the rival team, and they hate each other, but it's just like a suburban Melbourne netball team. I don't really feel like that exists in America in the same way.
Yeah.
Of just like the mundanity of it.
Yeah.
Is great. There's also the very fun episode where Kath becomes convinced that Kim is gay. Because she's not going back to Brett, and because she's helping, she goes to play golf.
Yeah,
Sharon.
Yeah,
and then she becomes obsessed with the idea. And then Kel is trying to say, oh well, you know, like everyone has a gay phase, and he's like, I was in the Navy for 6 years, and she's appalled by this, and so he has to prove to her that he's straight, and he turns up with lilies and a man bag. This was actually one of the bits that I had seen before, was like the montage of her running through the center of town, and she sees, and everything has some kind of like synonym for gay on it.
Yeah.
And she's like panicking. It's very shot in this very like histrionic style.
Yeah. I had forgotten, or I didn't think I realized that it is shot in that sort of the office style of like it's a documentary, but also does have some, in the first episode at least, some narration.
Yeah.
Which is very strange. We're like, there's like three moments where they talk about as if they're talking to a documentarian, but none of the rest of it is like, oh, this is a documentary crew following them. It's like, there's a little bit of narration about like, oh, that's my life now. And that's what it's like. Like, oh.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a little bit inconsistent in places. Yeah. Cause there's that bit where she's talking about the job at the call center. And she was like, I had to leave my job at a call center after enduring lots of verbal abuse given by me.
Yeah. Does that happen in the other episodes? I only watched the first one.
I can't really remember because now I've done that thing where I watched like three and sort of blended into one another.
Yeah.
But yeah,
I feel like that. Surely they drop that at some point. I mean, especially by the time they're making a movie. Surely they're not still doing the slight bit of... I was like, oh, that's weird.
Yeah, maybe just like early on they couldn't quite decide what they were doing.
Yeah.
But also there's a lot of kind of... I would say the plot is quite thin.
Yes,
it's very much. It's just a vehicle to like lather jokes on top of.
Yeah,
there's very minimal. Like the whole plot about how whether or not she's going to go back to Brett, but he's got a dog now.
Yeah,
and then it seems like she's going to go back to him, and then she doesn't a lot of times. But it's never really explained what the decision making process is.
Yeah.
There's also this whole thing where he has a threesome with these two twins who are sisters, which is really they don't really dig into that much. Although there was a funny bit where they were like, oh yeah, he's a dud root, and she's like, yeah, but he's my dud root, so keep your greasy hands on. as a document of Australia, we just don't get much Australian comedy over here.
Yeah,
so it's fun to experience the
I feel like it's well, this is what's interesting about the US version is they set it in Florida, which makes it seem like they are different. They are other because they're in the weird. They're weird. Whereas, I think the reason Kath and Kim was so popular is because, like, this is what the suburbs in every city in Australia is like. They all look, all these houses look identical. Every house looks exactly like that. Every house, like, they all look like that. And there's someone you know who has some version of, like, oh, we're going to the Fountain Gate Westfield. Absolutely. That's where you're hanging out. That's why it's so beloved, because, like, this is what the suburbs are everywhere.
Yeah. There's so many shots of them on escalators.
Yes.
And discussing, like, the deals at the hi-fi shop.
The amount of time you spend on escalators growing up in the suburbs of Australia.
Mm. It's a great hobby.
Yeah.
The escalator.
I remember friends, like, when I was like 19 or 20, I was still living at home, and friends of mine from who I'd met interstate came and stayed. And, like, because I lived in the suburbs in Sydney, way out west, there's nothing to do. And I'm like, they're like, oh, let's go do something. I'm like, we went to Westfield. We rode the escalators. We were like, there's a food court that I know where that is. We can go to this food court.
Oh, we can hit the food
court. We can hit the food court, wander around the shops. I mean, I don't really know what else there is to do.
Go and watch the Parramatta Eels.
Go to Hoyt's Cinema. Yeah.
Hoyt's Cinema.
We got a couple. Hoyt's, Greater Union. Yeah, we'll hit them up.
Oh, okay, nice. Do they have any distinguishing features in the cinema?
Mostly just the logo. Those are the big differences.
Fine, It was the confidence with which you said Hoyt's Cinema suggested that it was some kind of particular...
I actually think the Greater Union would probably be a better cinema to go to, but Hoyt's was our local one.
But in a way more authentic, thereby.
Certainly more authentic to the experience of wandering around a Westfield and going to Hoyt's.
Because that was
going
to be my other question. Like, are there... In the way that I feel like Partridge is a very sort of familiar character archetype, is sort of the Kath and Kim character like a very familiar, like, does it feel like you know someone like that?
They feel like it's weird because the language that they use is like all the dud root and stuff is there. It's weird. Like, it's a weird hangover from, obviously they're playing that, all that aspect up. And it's a hangover from, like, you know, like the 70s and 80s sort of Australian language.
Okay.
Like, no one is probably saying dud root.
Or big hunk of spunk.
Or big hunk of spunk. But probably at some, but like, it's that hangover of them being slightly older that maybe they still use a bit of, like, oh, big hunk of spunk. And then they're playing it up, and then, which is, I guess the weird thing with the language, where they're taking the language from probably a decade earlier. And then pretending, then saying that they're still using it and they're just, like, out of touch. But then creating language, we're like, oh, I forgot how many catchphrases were from this show that then was just in Australian lexicon. Like, we would use, like, look at me all the time.
Look at me.
Look at me, Kimmy. Look at me. Like, I'm like, oh, I forgot that was everywhere forever. That everyone would always say that. And, like, oh, unusual. Unusual.
The ultimate compliment.
The ultimate compliment for anything was just like, oh, it's unusual.
Or just to have seeded a phrase. In the greater Australian lexicon.
Truly. Yeah. And then I can't remember what other ones, but, like, look at me. Like, I'm like, oh, I forgot that was, everybody was saying that forever.
But
they're definitely types that you're like, oh, I recognize.
There's such fun little set pieces, like him proposing to her in a hi-fi store.
Yes.
And he's on all of the screens.
I think Kim especially. Kath especially is like, oh, this is a lot of people's mums. Is Kath.
There's
a lot of people's mums who you can picture in how Kath is.
Oh, 100%. I was nudging Annabelle a lot when there were bits where she's going, like, she was like, well, I'd like to be a beautiful bride like you one day, although of course less large. I was like, that is so many mums and their daughter. The weird competitiveness.
Yeah. Actually, even Kel in his version of because he's definitely a particular type of Australian man sort of like, oh, I'd love to get, like, the way that he's chatting her up and the way that he is. He's a butcher.
Yeah.
But in, like...
But he calls himself a purveyor of fine meats.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that is also like, oh, this is also a particular type of Australian guy.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I wonder with, like, how much Australian media you consume. Or, like, the media that we put out there to the world of, like, a Paul Hogan type. It's like, there are way more men like Kel in Australia than there are, like, here we go, mate.
Yeah.
There's way more men. It's like, oh, hey, yeah, you know, hair slicked down, man bag.
Yeah. Well, because it's...
Maybe
it's,
we could save water and have a shower together.
Yeah, it's tough to be a Paul Hogan guy. That's more of a commitment to the lifestyle. You've got to be a tough guy who can fix a ute. And that's hard.
Yeah, that's
hard
difficult.
To be a tough guy who can fix a ute.
That's
you know?
Not the girl's not a man. He's a man.
Oh, he's a man, all right.
He's a man through and through. But he's a particular type of man.
He's certainly not gay, apart from a couple of years in the Navy. But, you know... Yeah, there's a certain, yeah, he does have a slightly partridgey quality.
Yes.
But also it's interesting where like kind of Kel is like, he's very like cringy, but he also has, he's one of the more reasonable characters.
Yeah.
He's sort of, he's constantly the one going like, oh, that's probably fine. What's the issue there?
Yeah.
And Kath is the one who's like appalled, taking hard stances.
Yeah.
But yeah, it does feel that like Kath is kind of the comedic heart of the show.
Yeah.
Kim is more there to be surly about things.
Yeah.
And be a reluctant participant in whatever Kath is doing.
Yeah.
Whereas, yeah, Kath is like the constant obsession with exercise. But yeah, the particularly the episode where Kel is, he's trying to develop a special sausage for their wedding.
Yeah.
And he is, he's trying all these different recipes. And on the one hand, Kath is like, She's saying to everyone how romantic it is that he's designing this sausage for their wedding, but also she's furious at the process of it and the fact that it's taking up space in her kitchen. And this also feels like an archetype I've seen so many times before, where like whenever she speaks to anyone else about Kel, she's like, he's wonderful, he's a sensual man, he's unlocked nooks and crannies in me that I've never seen before. And when she's speaking directly to him, she like hates
this guy. yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, because when it's speaking to someone else, this is about saving face because she is marrying this man.
Yes.
So it's a reflection on her.
Yeah.
But when they're together, she's like, I cannot stand you.
Yeah. Yeah, especially around some, like there's some stuff where he does drive her wild when he's proposing.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, you know, maybe we make day, turn day into night.
Yeah. Yeah, the names, the fact that everyone's name seems to start with a K, and also their surname is Day and his surname is Night. Like, yeah. They were just having fun.
Yeah, they're having fun. They're having fun in that room.
Yeah. The beauty of comedy. That
and Kath and Kim, great names.
Yeah.
Great comedy names.
Yeah, it feels like it really, it sums up a vibe. Kath and Kim. I was at school with three brothers who were called Blue Buck and Bo.
Blue Buck and Bo. Blue Buck and Bo.
I know. Their father was Canadian. I feel like that's germane information for this. That's important. I mean, still though.
Blue Buck and Bo. That could be a show. Blue Buck and Bo.
Yeah.
Not much of one, but it could be one.
Yeah, it could be. Actually,
you could turn anything into a show, really.
It's a fairly thin premise, but you know what? Thinner premises have been made. Worse things have been done.
Yeah, I feel like with Kath as well, like the obsession with the exercise, but also the sticking with the haircut.
Oh yeah.
At some point getting a haircut, presumably in the '80s, she got the perm and there's just like forever.
Yeah, the
and
perm
that's
is
a real
quite
type.
Something.
That's a real type.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny that the perm is such a like it had its day.
Yeah. You
know? But there was a time when really everyone had one. But it feels like it's not coming back.
Yeah.
Like some haircuts feel like, okay, there's a cycle of haircuts. They come in and out of fashion, as with some clothes, and there are some things where it's like no, that was really, that was a dead end. Like, it came in, everyone had a perm for a bit. My dad had a perm. Crazy. There's some photos of my dad in the 80s where he has what can only be described as verging on an afro.
Yeah.
And for a man as white as you can imagine my father was, it was an interesting look. But obviously it's like, it's not quite the same as like when a white person has like braids or dreadlocks, they just look completely ridiculous.
Yeah.
Whereas when someone has a perm, it's like vaguely plausible that is just what their hair is like.
Yeah.
But it's kind of, you're like, there's something unnerving about it in the look.
Yeah.
This is one of my crank theories. I think that if you change your hair too much, it looks weird.
Yes.
Like if you dye your hair a color that's too far from your natural hair color because it doesn't go with the other bits.
Yes. Yeah.
But few people abide by this.
They go the bleach blonde, but they keep the dark.
Yeah.
Goatee.
All the like when you, and this is usually kind of women over 50 who'll go for the like, I've gone bright red. I've gone purple. And you're like, no, why have you done that?
That's
That's a terrible choice.
Yeah.
You've got a comedy hairstyle now.
You've gone comedic with your
Yeah. You've gone children's entertainer, which is never a... Yeah. Don't go into the hairdressers and ask for the children's entertainer. Yeah. That's not what you want. Yeah.
Yeah. The purple hair. I mean, it is a really a particular, you know, it has to be a woman over a certain age or a woman under a certain age goes the purple hair.
Yeah. Yeah. You do get the young, the sort of the more like
different vibes,
the counterculture.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it feels like, yeah, if you're under 30 and you've got like a brightly colored, unnatural colored hair, it's either a political or a fashion statement, one or two.
Yeah.
But if you're over 50 and you're doing it, it's like, I'm still fun.
Yes.
That's the tone.
It is not political. It is, yeah entertainment.
And men over 50 aren't doing it because they're not still fun. And they know that.
Yeah, they know that.
They know there's no amount of hair dye in the world that can make them seem fun at that age.
I went with a friend of mine. We went to a pub in Edinburgh, which was probably the worst pub in Edinburgh. That's why we loved it. Mm. And there was this group of two old couples just sitting together.
Okay, yeah.
Old guys. The women didn't have dyed hair, but when you said that about the men, they haven't dyed their hair. They haven't. Gray hair, little guys.
Mm. Yeah.
Probably gotten shorter with age.
Sure.
The chat, he's gone. One of the guys has gone, how many steps have we all done today?
Well, proportionately more.
Yeah.
Presumably.
Because you're shorter.
Yeah. I mean, the stride length alone.
Yeah. But I love that. It's just like, that is, you get to the point, it's like, all right, round the table, how many steps we done? I love it.
So some people do have a phenomenal stride.
Yeah.
I used to notice this about, like, remember my father, even in his 70s, I'd be like walking around with him places sometimes, and he would just be like, making incredible walking pace to the point where I was sometimes like half jogging to keep up, and I was taller than him, like by like a solid inch, and I'm just like, how are you outstriding me? I don't know how you're doing this, but we clearly had the technique. I don't know what it was, but
just powering on.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how it's done.
No,
but yeah, no, it must be. It's tough. It's tough being a short man, I think.
Yeah, it's got to be.
Yeah, it's the kind of the scampering.
You wouldn't wish it on anyone.
You wouldn't. It's tough. And I think it's the equivalent for the only way you can experience it as a woman probably is being like over 6'3".
Yeah.
There's like what being under 5'10" is for a man. And it's like that. Yeah.
I don't mind. Like, I wouldn't mind being a short guy if you're an old guy. I love a short old guy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's something about him where it's like, man, this guy knows a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's kind of like, he's squat. He's walking in. He's like, yeah, I got the answers.
He's got like a philosopher energy.
But like a little 26-year-old, yuck.
Yeah, absolutely brutal.
Little dude who's just 26 and just walking around. No.
Yeah. the only time when the short guy is in charge is bouncers.
Yeah.
The little bouncer is always the one who's in charge.
Always.
And there always is a little one. Which is strange for a profession that is so predicated on largeness. It really is almost the only qualification.
But a little bouncer. So that is actually what's funny about the bouncers. Is it's just like bouncers can range from little guy who's probably pretty scary.
Yeah.
Probably will get you.
Yeah.
He's been working on it.
Yeah, he's scrappy.
Then like your guys who are pretty well built. And then just massive fat guys.
Yeah.
Who you're like, I mean, you are pretty big.
Yeah. It's like the sumo school of bouncing where just like the sheer momentum... of like they're physically blocking you. You can't get past them. And if they're moving in a direction, you're going in that direction too.
Yeah.
Like there's no two ways about it.
Yeah. It may as well be a boulder. that needs to be rolled out by the other ones.
I've had this conversation with people before about both men and women who have like taken an interest in like self-defense or like a martial art or whatever. And I'm like, what you need to understand is in almost any fight situation, if you're like 10 kilos heavier, you will win. There's no, like if you're like exactly the same size and weight as someone, there's some technique could come into it or whatever.
Yeah.
Like if someone's like just twice the size of you, there's no karate shit that you're going to do. Like they will just sit on you. You're not doing any kind of Bruce Lee stuff if you're being sat on.
I wonder if the only counter to that is psycho little guy. Every little guy I've ever known in any group of friends is always psycho.
Yeah.
And they're like, they could be 20 kilos heavier. Those little guys are going to, they'll find a way. They've been thinking about it a lot.
Yeah. Well, I think also a lot of it is, particularly in a society like the UK, which is so exceptionally unviolent, or at least most of the time, apart from your 3 a.m. at the kebab shop, but that's quite a small group. is if you the mere threat of violence, if you seem insane enough, no one will. And I think that's what the psycho little guy often trades off of.
Yes.
If you just seem like you're prepared to take it to a place that they're not prepared to go to. I used to know this guy who was quite short, like a guy at university. And if people started on him, regardless of how kind of remote, like whether they were just kind of like fronting up or whatever, or whether it was like to escalate into a fight, he would immediately headbutt them in the face.
Yes.
Because he was like, at that point, they're just like, whoa. Like, what? Like, they're immediately put off because they're just like, this guy's first resort, unhesitating, was to hit me with his own face.
Yeah.
Like, where else is this guy prepared to take it?
And he's a little guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Not super little, but like 5'8". Like, not a big guy.
Yeah. We had that at school where I remember one time.
Look, he's headbutting him straight in the chin.
Worse. I mean, scary. Oh, I remember one time at school. Yeah, it was probably bullying, but there was a group of us, and there was like somebody in the group.
That's a great immediate preface to this. Yeah, it was probably bullying.
It was probably bullying, but there was a kid at school that he was a relatively tall guy.
Okay.
And I mean, somebody in our group was like, you have to fight one of us. Pick someone from the group to fight. Mm-hmm. And I was standing in the group being like, well, I hope it's not me because I'm not going to fight this guy and I will lose.
Yeah.
But then he looks around the group and there was a little guy in the group and this guy was pretty tall. He was probably like 6'2".
Mm-hmm.
And he picked the little guy and everyone was like, you're dead. Wrong choice. Actually, the wrong choice. Because the little guy was psycho. The little guy was throw a chair at someone sort of little guy.
Oh, wow.
Genuinely went to prison after school.
Oh.
For bottling a friend of mine. A friend of his as well.
Wait, hang on. So what was... I'm trying to get my head around this situation.
The
fight situation? Yeah, so it's your group of friends.
A group of friends. It was probably like 8 of us standing in a circle.
Right. And your group of friends includes the psycho little guy.
Includes the psycho little guy.
And then there's this big guy.
There's another big guy who we have challenged, or at least somebody in our group is going, we're going to fight you.
Okay.
We're not all going to fight you.
How old are you?
We would have been 15.
Okay, right.
We're going to fight you.
Is he in a group or is he...
He's on his own.
Okay, right.
He's on his own.
Fine.
And the group has decided that we are going to fight him.
Okay.
But not going to beat him up.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, well, that would be ungentlemanly.
That would be ungentlemanly.
That would be against the sort of Bushido code of the teenager. Yeah, sure.
But there are 8 of us to choose from and you can choose your fighter. So you can fight one of us 8.
Okay, nice.
So rather than 8 people on one, which is unfair and we all agree on that.
Yeah.
We are letting him decide who he would like to fight in the group. And he's looked around the group. There's some big guys in the group.
I'm
not a big guy in this group.
Yeah, you're one of the medium guys.
I'm one of the medium guys in the group, and I don't want to be picked.
No.
And he doesn't pick any of the medium guys because medium guys are still, you know, relatively tall compared to the really short guy in the group.
And then
he picks the really short guy in the group.
So did a fight then ensue?
A fight then did ensue. Okay. But, the problem with the little guy... Mm-hmm. Doesn't play by the rules of a fight.
Okay, yeah, sure.
The rest of us probably would have, I don't know, what do? Push? I've never been in a fight. Never been in a fight. Never been hit. What about that?
I tend to think fights, they start tentative.
Yeah.
Well, at least fights with guys who aren't very used to fighting, which is most people.
Yes.
And then usually... Well, I think a lot of them just end up on the ground. There's a lot of just vague scrabbling around. Yeah, the wrestle. Yeah. Or there's someone just like lands one and then it's over.
Yeah.
But there's generally a lot of there's a lot of milling. There's a lot of missing. Kind of weird hugging. There's a sensual element, I think. To a certain
you've been in a fight? A few fights?
Yeah. I mean, I hasten to add, not really as an adult, because it is dumb. It is very dumb, but I went to school in Essex. There were a lot I relate to this scenario in the sense that it's so funny trying to explain one of these situations where you got into a fight as a teenager, as an adult, because none of it makes any sense. It's like, oh, well, there's this guy, and we obviously challenged him to a fight, but also in that way that teenagers are being faux reasonable about a completely unreasonable situation. We understood that we couldn't just jump this guy. We had to sort of nominate
a
champion.
We're not monsters.
Yeah. because in teenager life, you have a keen sense of like the social order, even though as an adult, it makes no sense to you whatsoever, your perception of the world was and its various priorities.
Yeah, 2 have to enter the arena. We can't send 8 of us in.
Yeah.
That would be unfair.
Yeah, I feel like the closest I've had to a fight as an adult has been kind of like weird half fights where like someone's trying to start a fight and I'm kind of being like, this is dumb.
Yeah.
But you're sort of having to entertain the idea enough to attempt to defuse the situation or just avoid yourself just getting like jumped from behind. Yes. You're having to at least engage with the fact that this guy's trying to fight you.
Yeah.
I had one happen to me years ago that was really funny. This guy, he was the editor of a student newspaper in Cambridge. And anyway, this guy, he was pissed off at me because I had taken the piss out of his student newspaper and in a way that had been like viral within the university.
Right. Lovely.
He was mad about it.
Of course.
And I don't remember the context of this, but I was on the top floor. They had like a terrace smoking area of a Hawaiian-themed nightclub in Cambridge. If you can imagine such a cursed space.
Yes.
As Hawaiian-themed nightclub in Cambridge. Yeah. I was up there, and I don't know why I'd gone there, because like, I wasn't with anyone. Yeah. So I must have gone there to meet someone or something. I don't know. Anyway, I was there, and I'd gotten chatting to these builders from Kettering who were on a night out. And these were actually kind of your scary short guy type vibe. Yeah, they were like big like men who've done a lot of manual labor since a young age, like not that tall but very wide guys.
Yes.
And for whatever reason, these guys, they're perfectly nice. They're taking a bit of a shine to me. I'm just kind of chatting to them. I was like waiting for a friend or something. And this guy walks in, spots me, like makes a beeline for me across the smoking area, and then says something, kind of says hello. Oh hi. And then just takes a swing at me. And I just kind of like step back away from it. This was not a guy, a fighty guy. I'm not a tough guy. I don't know if that comes across to the listener, but I feel like I was tougher than this guy. It's a low bar, but I have cleared it. So I just kind of like step back from it. And then he's immediately seized by these like big, big builder men who are like, what the fuck? They've like got him up against the wall. And then he's kind of, it's like full like comedy, like legs dangling in the air.
Yeah.
And then he's like, oh, I have a dispute. And then I was like, you're just putting down. I don't think it's not necessary. But that's the thing. I think there's very rarely any kind of fight story where you come out looking cool.
Yeah. I mean, what do you do? Like, you hit a guy?
Yeah.
That's the win?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that's the win.
We're coming in with the hot take that getting into fights is kind of embarrassing.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of closest I've come as an adult. I mean, closest I've come as an adult to being, I was in Brighton.
Okay.
Recently.
A rough town.
Rough town. Walked past a group of guys. I noticed one of the guys in the group had been kind of erratic.
Okay.
But he was like, he did at some point stop to kick a bank door as he was walking past.
Hates
like,
the banks.
And I'm like, well, I don't want to be near these guys. So I walked across the road or like on the road. Like,
I've got a bank account. I'm bored. I can't join in with this kind of anti-bank.
I bank with Monzo. I don't even need a bank. I don't need a branch. There's no branches that you can damage in mine, but I don't need to be near someone who's trying to get into a branch.
You're doing sort of banking Aikido. Like, good luck damaging my bank branch. There is none.
So I passed them and like none of the rest of them were all fine. But it's this one guy who was like, he goes, hey, bald guy. Hey, bald guy. And I'm like...
You're like, I'm not completely bald.
I'm like, well, yeah. I'm like, could be anybody.
I'm balding.
There's people around.
Yeah. Also, so many men are bald.
Yeah.
But might as well yell up, hey, white guy. Like, yeah, sure.
I mean, but I just kept walking because okay, I'm not going to engage. I'm not going to engage with a guy who's yelling at me. What am I going to be like, what? Like, what do you want?
I'm saying, yes, that is my name.
Yes, I am a bank door. And then I kept walking. And like, I was walking quick because I was trying to get to the station. And he's like, hey, bald guy. Hey, bald guy. And I'm just keep walking. I'm like, I'm not going to.
Yeah, no good can come of this.
Of course. Yeah. Throws a bottle at me. Smashes on the ground, like smashes on the pavement behind me. I turn around, look at him.
Mm-hmm.
Just with like, the look I try to give him is like, come on, man.
I'm just a bald guy going about his business.
I'm just trying to get to the train. Come on, man. Which did, I don't know if he, I then turned back, looked at him. He didn't do anything. Like he looked at me. He had another bottle, but he didn't do anything. And then I kept walking again faster, put a hat on, which I'm like, there you go, that's the move.
His vision is based on baldness.
Yeah. I'm like, if he was pretty drunk, if he's out there
he's
looking
like,
for
where did he go?
Yeah. I got through a crowd, put a hat on. I'm like, if he's looking for a bald man, he can't find one anymore.
You're like Jason Bourne.
Yeah.
Jason Bald. Yeah, there we go.
That's a wrap. But I put a hat on, disappeared into the station, didn't see him again. But I was like, that's the closest I've come to. I think that's the closest I've ever come to a fire, is somebody throwing a bottle at me in Brighton.
That's awesome. That's also like the funniest way to get out of a fight is by deploying intense reasonableness.
Yeah.
Just being like, oh, come on, man.
Yeah.
Why?
My theory was, based on everybody I've ever known who's ever wanted to be in a fight, is he really wanted to fight someone.
Yeah.
He wanted somebody to, or what he wanted was somebody to fight him. And I'm like, I'm not going to fight you. You can throw bottles at me or call me a bald cunt or whatever. I'm not going to turn around and fight you.
Yeah, you've really got to, I think, for most people to gin up the ability to fight someone, even if you want to fight someone, you need something to kick against. There has to be some degree of confrontation. And if the other person is just like walking backwards, you're like, it's difficult to just throw a punch at someone who's done and said nothing.
Yes.
You've got to be a real psycho to do that.
Yeah.
You've got to justify it to yourself somehow.
Yeah. Which is like, I that was the feeling I got, was like, he wants me to say what?
Yeah.
And he goes, what do you mean? What, you know?
Whereas what you actually said was, what?
Come on.
I'm a little birthday boy. You wouldn't hurt a little birthday boy.
Just trying to get to the station, man. Come on. There's not enough trains for me to spend time being fought by you.
No, indeed. You know the rail network in this. Yeah. You're going to punch me, and then I'm going to end up on a replacement bus. And I know which of the two is worse. It's not even the punch I'm worried about.
Punch
we'll get through that.
Punch me hard enough so I have to stay overnight in a hospital in Brighton. If you're going to punch me at all.
Yeah, that's what I need. I need a bed for the night.
Yeah,
if that's where it's going.
Yeah,
you've got to make your decision.
Bottle me good. That's all I ask.
Bottle me real good.
Because if you bottle me enough that I have to go just make a police report and I miss the last train, I'm furious.
That's going to be so annoying for me personally.
Yeah. Put me out for the night.
Yeah, I once actually got a friend of mine out of a fight that he was quite up for.
Yeah,
but I was just basically it was my birthday and it was. This was in Moscow, like, it must be like nearly 10 years ago now. I was about 23. It must have been my 23rd birthday, I think. And we were at this bar and I was certainly on drugs. I can't remember if my friend was, but I was on the kind of drugs where you're like, hi, everyone.
Yeah.
Not the kind of drugs where you're like, who wants a fucking fight?
Yeah.
Anyway, so I go downstairs for a cigarette and I smoke my cigarette. And then I noticed that my friend Vanya is... in like a kind of like nose-to-nose type confrontation with a guy who's quite big. Now, Vanya's not very big. He's smaller than me. And this guy is bigger than me. He's like pretty big. And then I just kind of walk over there. But I'm so on drugs that I just kind of innocently go, guys, what's going on here? And then Vanya kind of turns to me and he's like, go away. And then this guy goes, he's like, yeah, you don't want to get involved. And this, you know, I'm going to fight your friend. And I was just like, but it's my birthday. And then this guy just went, oh, happy birthday. And then we got kind of distracted on this conversation about my birthday. And it kind of sapped the will for him to fight. But I learned a lesson that day, which is Russians really respect a birthday.
Yeah, that's great.
If you intervene in any situation to tell someone that it's your birthday, they will almost like a Pavlovian response.
Yes.
They'll have to wish you a happy birthday.
Yeah.
And then it can distract them at the vital moment.
And then you can fight them.
Yeah.
You can get the jump on them.
Yeah. If they ever attack, we should try doing that.
Yeah. Bring out a birthday cake.
As they're landing on the beaches, just being like, it's our birthday. They just immediately pop their heads up and go, happy birthday.
Sorry.
You're just like mowing them down. It's their one weakness.
Their one weakness. They have to wish someone a happy birthday. They will sing the whole song. They'll do the hip hips. They'll do all of it. There's so much time to get them.
Yeah, it's like the it's like Ron Burgundy in the teleprompter. Whatever's on there, he will read. They will sing the whole happy birthday song, same tune.
Yep.
But they just do. It's amazing that it's the same tune seemingly in every language. But they've just said every language has just adapted whatever happy birthday is in that language.
What's happy birthday in Russian?
It's a mouthful.
Yeah.
It's Snём Rождения.
Fun.
Literally with the day of your birth.
With the day of your birth.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, the verb to congratulate takes the preposition with in Russian. So you congratulate someone with something. And then also in Russian, you can just leave out whole bits of sentences. So they just leave out the word congratulate. It's implied. You're not saying, we congratulate you with your birthday. But if you say with your birthday, that implies that the congratulations.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. It's a complex language.
Yes.
But that does, they manage to fit that into Snyom Rajinya Tibia. They get it to work.
Yeah, great.
The ingenuity. Yeah. I always find it really weird. You know when you go somewhere and they're using an unorthodox happy birthday?
Yeah.
You know, when you're in a restaurant and they use like the Stevie Wonder version. There's a restaurant in Finsbury Park that does that, and it really catches me off guard every time. Because the Stevie Wonder happy birthday it's loud and proud.
Yes.
It's straight out. There's no fucking around with the Stevie Wonder version. It's like, ah! It's like hearing your phone alarm out of context.
Yeah.
When someone's ringtone is like yes. the sleep alarm tone and you're like, yes. ah!
Yeah. Nightmare.
Pavlovian response.
Yeah.
It makes me feel like I know what PTSD is like when I hear it. When someone has my like alarm tone as their ringtone and I just hear it out of context. So it's like a cold sweat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not good.
How's the Stevie Wonder happy birthday go?
It's like, happy birthday to you.
Of course. Yeah. That one's good.
Yeah, it is good. Yeah,
that's a good one.
But they always, I find when they play it, they because the happy birthday song is, there are no verses or choruses. It just kind of, it is a short thing.
Yeah.
When they do the Stevie Wonder thing, they don't give you any of the intro or the verse. They just come straight in on, happy birthday to you, which makes it very alarming. it kind of has the energy of like I Feel Good by James Brown, which just yes. begins with a yell.
Yeah.
There's a rich vein of TikToks of people like playing it at full volume in their house to like an unsuspected person.
Yeah.
Like just sat at their desk and then they just get like, ah, out of nowhere. And it's like falling off a chair. Great stuff.
Yeah.
And yeah, that is the Stevie Wonder.
Happy birthday. Yeah, that's good. That's a good one. What's the other one? There's another one. I mean, there's happy birthday, Mr. President.
Yeah, 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 of course.
Of course.
Yeah. Limited use, that one.
Yeah. You can change Mr. President to whatever you like, but
yeah, you could be the president of anything.
That is true.
Yeah, there's
president.
There's the one in The Simpsons, the Happy Birthday Lisa, that's sung by the fake Michael Jackson,
but by the real Michael Jackson.
Yeah, who's been played by the real Michael Jackson?
Yes.
Apparently, someone who was working on that episode with Michael Jackson said that they just like left Michael Jackson in a room in the voice studio for a bit, and they came back and he was just like kissing a Bart Simpson doll on the mouth. Which is just
great.
A strange man, to be sure. It's very funny the people who are like, Michael Jackson completely innocent. Just in the face of all evidence.
They are some of my favorites. Where it's just like, just say you like his music anyway.
Yeah. Which is fine. That's not an unreasonable position either. Yeah. That's like, no one's going to, it's not like people are like, well, you can't, they play it on the radio.
Yeah.
Like that socially, we have decided it's fine to still, the music is good. A troubled man who did some bad things, but, you know, good music, fine.
Yeah.
But being like, no, he didn't do any of that stuff is crazy.
Yeah. It's like, just, you like it and, you know.
And damn the consequences.
And you like, yeah. And because of that, you like what he did.
Yeah, yeah. You can't undo what he did by saying that Billie Jean isn't a good song.
I think you just have to pick a date and assume that he didn't do anything before that date, and any music he made before then, you're like, great. Later albums, you're like, yeah, actually, I don't like them.
Yeah, and the later albums, not that good anyway.
Exactly. So it's, feel free to abandon them.
And what we're learning here is that there's a level of being a pedophile, which has a deleterious effect on the music. And up until that point, the music is still good.
Yeah.
And then, there is actually a moral inflection point where it begins to negatively affect your ability to... Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's very. I remember when that Michael Jackson documentary came out that was all about the, you know, the pretty nasty allegations and stuff. And Pianovelli had a great bit about people going like saying to him like, "Oh, you must watch it. Like it's harrowing. We were all in floods of tears. You know, 3 hours of this, you know, testimony from his victims, and you know, it was just really incredible to watch. And you must see it." And he's like, "No. I already think he's a pedophile. I don't need to watch him." Like, why does anyone need to watch this? Like, it's like, yeah, I know, I agree. The news reports about the victims was enough. I don't need to see an in-depth traumatizing.
I think he's bad.
Yeah, I didn't. I'm not like, I'm on the fence about this Michael Jackson guy. Let me turn on this documentary and see.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be fun if it was more of like a both sides documentary, like when they do one of those like unexplained mysteries ones, like was Michael Jackson a pedophile, like, you know, Panorama investigates.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. I do like the, yeah. If you still just say you like his music because of that, because of what he did, you like his music now. The one guy who didn't like it before.
I actually think it shows a degree of integrity.
I didn't like his music. Now I discovered this about him. He's actually now one of my favorite artists. This is how you find out. There's definitely somebody who found out about Michael Jackson because of that documentary. Didn't know anything about Michael Jackson. Lived in a world without knowing Michael Jackson. Watched a documentary. He's like, I'm going to listen to some of these tunes. Let's see what he was all about. And then was like, this is good.
Prefers the later albums.
Yeah, prefers the later albums. Yeah. But there has to be somebody who discovered Michael Jackson from the documentary. And then listen to his music.
It's even funnier if it's someone who believed the documentary and thought all the stuff in the documentary was bad, but was still like, oh, but this guy was
curious.
Yeah.
I don't know any of these songs.
People like being like, how did you hear about this guy? Don't worry about it. But
I'm playing him all the time.
In fact, I would say don't Google him at all. That would be my number one advice. Keep the search to Spotify only.
Yeah, go Spotify only.
And keep it away from the podcast section too. Just stick to the music search.
Go to the music. There's some good stuff. Thriller, incredible.
Yeah.
How did I discover it? Don't worry about that.
Anything from the podcast section, steer away from that. You don't need to know.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like that is, you know, when you find like somebody's in the news, that'll be like somebody in the news, usually somebody died. You're like, who is this? You look them up and you're like, oh, this is great. You know, this musician, they were making some good stuff. I didn't know them before. That's got to be somebody.
And then you scroll down to the controversy section on Wikipedia.
You have a little look and you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
How do I feel about myself as a person?
I mean, the amount of people in the British public eye over the years who have defended themselves in court for child pornography on the basis that it was research. They were actually trying to hunt paedophiles, and that's why they had all of this child pornography.
Yes, of course.
All right, well, that's been Kath and Kim.
It ends where it always must end.
It ends where it always must end, with a discussion of Michael Jackson. Yeah. And if you're just hearing about Michael Jackson now, don't Google him. Enjoy the music.
Enjoy the music.
Enjoy the music guilt-free. Don't look into, you know, the theme park and the other stuff.
Yes, no.
Yeah, that's our big recommendation.
Steer clear.
Yeah, getting the Men in Black thing so that you can enjoy Michael Jackson's
music. Go to the Wikipedia page, but just go to discography.
Yeah. Scroll, jump to. Hit the jump to button.
Don't read anything else. Look for the D, click there.
Yeah, avoid the controversy section at all costs.
For yourself. Just enjoy the music. Just
enjoy
the,
yeah.
Have a great dance.
Thank you very much for listening. I think this is a bonus. So thank you very much for being a Patreon subscriber. You're the best. And stay tuned for big, big things coming to the pod. We're going to be talking about Alpha Papa. It's going to happen. Yeah. And other new stuff yet to be announced. Thank you very much for being a subscriber. As ever, you can listen to Spooky.
Three O's and an H.
And an H. That's right. Do check that out. And we'll see you very soon. Bye-bye.
Peace.